and pull a move from Cortland's own book. Thrusting my dagger through her hand and yanking it out, she shouts, falling backward, and when I rise, I find two more guards have managed the same maneuver behind us, filling the space between Zayden and me. Bone crunches and a body flies around the guards, but there's easily a half dozen more waiting beyond the panthers. The closest guard has at least a foot on me and 50 pounds. And if the scars on his forearms are any measure, he's no stranger to fighting. But he's no Zayden. I charge before he can take a fighting stance and let muscle memory take over. My first cut landing deep in the outside of his thigh before I duck close, avoiding the swing of his long spear. They aren't made for close combat, and I am. He misses, thrusting the spear into the table, shattering glass, and giving me the time to regretfully slice the tendons behind his knee. It's a long-lasting injury for a warrior, but at least it won't kill him. He bellows, toppling sideways and falling from the dais, but before I can get up, pain explodes at the back of my head, and I'm yanked upward by my god's damned braid. A battering ram of an arm shoves my chest onto the bloodied plate between our packs, and my face narrowly misses a sharp shard of glass. The spear shattered my conduit. "Do your dragons scream before they die, Firebringer?" the guard hisses in my ear as she leans over my back. "Does it take them minutes to perish after you do, or is it instant?" Anger storms through my veins, heating my skin from the scalp down in a flood of smelted rage. "Your ignorance is staggering." Gods bless my flexibility. I swing my left arm behind my back and stab deep into her arm. She shouts, jerking upright, and I shove the heel of my hand against the table and throw every ounce of my energy into jolting backward, slamming my head into her face. Bone crunches and her weight disappears. I turn only to meet the stunning blow of an elbow against my cheekbone. Skin splits, my ears ring, and I fall back against the table, blinking the stars out of my eyes as a hand grabs hold of my throat and squeezes. "Violet!" Zayden yells, and I slash my blade across the offending arm and thrust my knee in a move even Mira would be proud of. The man falls, and I cough for my first breath as the dais shudders. I lift my blade toward the giant on my right, but the pommel of a sword reaches his temple first. The man collapses, and Zayden shoves him off the platform with his foot. "That is enough," Taryn declares.
"She holds her own," Andarna argues. "Oh, perhaps there are now too many."
"Stop playing and end this. It's the only way to kill their mounts," Cortland shouts from behind us.
Zayden reaches for my face with his empty hand, cupping my chin and turning my cheek toward the blue light as a dozen more guards pour in from behind Cortland. I take a precious second to make sure Halden's still alive. He's on the ground, chest moving, eyes closed. I think he might be unconscious, but I don't see any blood.
"Zayden, behind us," I warn as he studies the wound that has begun to throb.
When he doesn't answer, my gaze jumps to his, and my breath falters. I've seen him in battle before, seen the icy rage that comes over him, even the killing calm. I've witnessed the transformation from man to weapon, watched strategy overtake compassion, just like we're trained for. But this, whatever's swirling in those onyx eyes, is a tempest I've never beheld. It's one step past fury, as though Dune herself has stepped into his eyes and now peers back at me. He's Zayden, but he's not.
"Zayden," I whisper. "It's nothing, really. I've had worse on a sparring mat."
"They're all fucking dead."
His vow lifts the hair at the back of my neck, and the guards rush the table simultaneously with their weapons drawn, obviously having learned from the last failed assault. 2 on 12. Shit. I startle and pull back to fight, but Zayden whips his arm around my waist and yanks me against his chest. His sword hits the table, and to my complete and utter surprise, he presses a soft kiss to the top of my forehead as an axe. Metal hits the ground. Screams sound around us, and I jerk my head left, finding Zayden's outstretched hand mid-twist. The unmistakable sound of cracking bone follows, and every guard surrounding us drops to the floor, their heads twisted at unnatural angles. Wisps of barely there shadow dissipate,
and the band around my waist falls away with a familiar caress. No. No, no. Silence falls, thicker than the cloying, humid air. And my heart cries, demanding some other answer than the one my brain already knows, because there's only one logical explanation for what just happened. But even that can't be possible because there's no magic here. Tarn bristles along the bond, and Andarna shudders. I can feel them both closer than they should be. But there's still no bond to Zayden.
You, Cortland stammers. What have you done?
I drag my gaze along the wall of rustling palms to the left, over the scattered dead Devarelli guards and the panthers that happily investigate them, and across Zayden's chest, finding nothing but the same on the other side of the table. He's killed all dozen of them. It's only muscle memory that sheathes my daggers. Something falls from his hand, hitting his abandoned sword with a metallic clink. I grab the small object on impulse and close my fingers around the pebble-sized piece of alloy from my conduit. Agony cracks my soul clean open, as if I can give Zayden some of what he's just lost as I register the alloy's chill. Its complete and total lack of energy before shoving it in my front pocket.
They hurt you, he whispers without apology. They were going to kill you.
The why of it doesn't matter. Not right now. Not when we're surrounded on an enemy isle, escorted by riders who don't know what Zayden's become, and facing down Navarian royalty who would gladly see him dead. Why is a matter for later.
Violet.
The plea in his whisper pulls me together faster than anything else could, and I jerk my head up. His eyes are tightly closed as he rubs the bridge of his nose.
Come here,
I say quietly, rising on my toes and cupping the side of his face, lifting my hands to his temples to shield him from view. Cortland's chair squeaks on the dais.
Look at me.
Zayden's eyes flash open. Red rims his irises and consumes the gold flecks I adore so very much.
But he's still him behind these eyes.
I force my body not to react, then pull his forehead to mine.
I love you, and we need to get you out of here. So you have to trust me. Do not move until I tell you.
He nods.
Sit down.
Put your head in your hands and stay there. I let him go, and he does exactly as I ask, keeping his head low as if he's ashamed of what he's done. I need help, I tell Tarn and Andarna.
We're ready,
Tarn replies.
Thank gods, they're always in my head.
Andarna, when it's time, be gentle. For once, I don't even want to lecture her about not staying home when she's told, though she'd better have her harness on if this doesn't go as planned.
Is your lightning gentle? Do I critique your work? She huffs.
Cortland still stands behind the table, one of the panthers at his side, panic etched in every line of his face as the court mutters in muted tones of hysteria behind us.
I need you to get Sigale as close as possible, I tell Tarn, then offer what I hope is a contrite smile Cortland's way.
Our most sincere apology. But in Navarre, riders are trained to kill when you attack us, and our restraint can only be pushed so far. As you can see, the Duke feels some remorse. But you did just try to murder two of our kingdom's nobles. I cringe. Not a good look for negotiations. Shall we begin round two? I'll lead this time.
We have no magic.
Cortland's eyes widen, and his gaze darts over the room as if he's deciding whether or not to call for more guards.
Watch your words, Tarn warns. Sigale is here. It's getting cramped behind these trees.
And yet, here we are.
Did you know that I'm a lightning wielder? I cock my head to the side. Cortland swallows.
Takaris mentioned something along those lines.
What happened?
Halden sits up with perfect timing, rubbing a growing lump on his head.
Cortland's chest rises and falls more rapidly with every second, and I watch the panic build within him like a breaking dam ready to burst. I drop my right hand to my sheaths and wait for him to explode.
Shira!
He bellows, snapping faster than I expected.
Violet!
Halden shouts, and Zayden's back turns to stone beneath my hand. But true to his word, he doesn't move a muscle. Neither do I.
No!
Cortland shrieks, his eyes locking behind me in horror. His mouth falls agape, and the group of Devarelli erupts into full-blown, multi-toned cries of distress. You stay put, and she lives. I warn him as people run for their lives, emptying out the hall.
Well, holy shit,
Halden says with lifted eyebrows, wobbling as he stands. I look over my shoulder, and a slow, proud smile spreads across my face. And Darna stands with her front claws atop the bodies of the guards, her wings tucked in tight, her black tail flicking back and forth as she holds Shira delicately between her front four teeth, the snarling cat's claws safely tucked outside so she can't cause any damage. And Darna even has her lips puckered so the little cat doesn't get drenched in dragon saliva. How thoughtful.
Shira,
Cortland cries. You see? That's my little one. I pivot toward Cortland with a grin, wrinkling my nose. Raised her from a juvenile. Well, Taryn and Segael have, really, but you get the point. Now, Andarna doesn't eat our allies. It's a whole thing her elders are trying to teach her, but you know how adolescents are. Never really know if they feel like listening on any given day. I shrug. So, we can negotiate, and I will give you the rarest treasure found anywhere on this world. And Shira will walk away in need of a good bath. Or I can call Taryn and Segael in here, and they can all have little panther snacks before we fly back to the continent. Your choice. But either way, you should know that dragons outlive their riders. So had you succeeded in killing us, all you would have done was really piss them off before they scorched everything in their paths and flew back to tell the rest of the Empyrean what you'd done. I'm willing to let the Duke of Tirindor depart in good faith that you won't try to attack us again if you're ready to begin. Cortland's face falls, and for the first time since we walked in, he actually looks his age as he glances at Zayden.
Agreed.
My king, someone yells from behind me.
It's fine, Bursette,
Cortland calls back.
My trade minister will stay for negotiations, along with finance and,
he looks their way,
foreign.
As it should be, I nod, then hold out my hand to Halden. Bring me both of his weapons. Halden's head draws back in offense. Now, I add, just in case he thinks I'm kidding.
Way to fuck up the negotiations, Ryerson.
He glares and tosses them over. The steel lands on the table with a clatter, and I make quick work of sheathing Zayden's swords at his back and packaging the dagger in his bag with the sword of Tirindor. Already. I tap Zayden's back and he stands, turning away from Cortland and Halden before swinging his pack over his shoulder. He keeps his head low, but opens his eyes to look at me.
I'm not sorry, but I am.
I love you. I cup the sides of his face and choose my words carefully. Segael is just behind the trees. Take the heirlooms back to Aracia and handle whatever business you might have there for the province. My throat tightens as I hold his gaze, beating back the physical instinct to fight or flee at the glimpse of red. I rise up quickly and press a hard, quick kiss to his mouth. I'll see you at Bazgaeth in a week.
A week,
he promises, and then he goes, hanging his head as he descends the dais, then lifting it when he passes Andarna and striding through the trees like the arrogant ass he is. I pivot back to Cortland, noting that his three ministers are picking their way toward us. The king's gaze narrows on me in a glare that's equal parts hatred and appreciation.
Are you nervous now that your reckless one has departed?
I clear my throat, and the ground shakes as Taren steps over the trees, lowering his head so that the table linen moves with his breath. No, not particularly. Dragons are known to have short tempers, and Andarna's jaw is probably getting a little tired, so we should speed this along, don't you think? Cortland nods. Same terms as the Duke stated while I sat beside him earlier this evening. And I will add that Zayden Ryerson is to be pardoned of any crime you would accuse him of regarding tonight's activities, considering he was provoked and attacked by your guards. And he is to be allowed to return to Deverelli as a member of our riot at any time. I flash a smile. Cortland blusters, and his ministers call out protests as they make their way toward the dais. Or we can go home, and I can ask King Tari how he feels about tonight's actions and go from there. I shrug.
Accepted, Cortland bites out.
Excellent. Now, I expect you will accept the citrine as payment for the alliance, but agree you should be compensated for the prince's crimes. I unclasp the top of my pack and remove the hard metallic shards of shell I've carried all the way from the continent. The smallest pieces cover my palm, and the largest section would easily fit a medium-sized dog. I set the base on the table and its pieces inside, marveling at how the shades of color graduate from the darkest onyx on bottom to the brightest silvers on top, each ring of hardened scales nestled within the next, yet never separate, creating a smooth outer layer with no ridges, that only cracks when the hatchling is ready.
A dragon eggshell?
Cortland drags out the words less than impressed.
As amazing as your beasts are, once you've seen one shell, you've seen them all.
Not this one. A corner of my mouth lifts, and I run my finger along the inner edge, picturing her biding her time for hundreds of years, listening, waiting. A charge of energy runs up my arm, and I lift my brows at the sensation. This is the only shell of its kind. It belongs to the one and only Irid we have on the continent, the seventh breed of dragon. It is Andarna's kind we're searching for.
You expect me to believe?
Cortland starts, then stands completely awestruck, staring at Andarna. I glance back and see she's chosen to blend with the vegetation, so it appears Shira is hanging in midair, suspended by an unknown pointed vice. Yes.
And this is her shell.
Cortland leans closer. It is. She gave me permission to gift it to you. I push the heavy structure toward him.
I'm starting to drool, she warns me.
Just a little longer. You're doing great. Cortland nods, inspecting the shell.
Yes. Yes.
His head pops up.
One condition. He,
his finger swings toward Halden,
never steps foot on my isle again, or his life is forfeit.
Done.
Violet,
Halden argues.
Done,
I repeat to Cortland.
Then the deal is struck.
Cortland bows his head. The deal is struck. I bow mine, and Andarna spits Shira out. The panther bolts past us, taking her sisters with her.
You will begin at Unreal, will you not? It is the closest main isle after all.
Cortland waits for me to nod, then eyes Andarna's shell before stepping around the table toward me.
If you are amenable, there is another trade I might be able to broker for you.
I'm listening. An excerpt from Unbriel, Isle of Dune by Second Lieutenant Asher Daxton. There are times I look at Parapet, at the very act of threshing, and marvel that dragons have not been to Umbriel. What we call treacherous is their idea of primary school. Chapter 28.
You can't be serious,
Rhee whispers next to me 3 days later in battle brief, as Professor Devera questions first years about the fall of Velia, a mid-sized city 200 miles west of the Bay of Malak. Not only are the Venon moving in Krovla again, but in the 8 days we were gone, Signeason's flyer cadets arrived. Battle brief is now beyond standing room only capacity. Even the steps serve as seating.
She's absolutely serious,
Riddick responds from Rhee's other side, cracking a giant yawn that I immediately catch and repeat, fighting and failing to stifle it with my hand.
God damn, am I tired. Every muscle aches. My stomach can't decide if it wants to eat everything or expel it all. And I'm starting to see double when I try to focus on the map.
We flew in this morning from Athbeen, and were rewarded for pushing our limits by being sent straight into battle brief on General Atos's order. At least I managed to secure my father's books in my room and heard from Imogen that she'd kept my prisoner alive first.
He wanted you to trade your and Zayden's services for weaponry?
Sawyer asks, leaning forward from Riddick's right and adjusting the top of his prosthesis.
I thought Devarelli was neutral. They don't even have an army.
Zayden, my hand clenches around my pen as I scribble the nearly mid-February date on my notes. How many more times can he slip before the rings around his irises become permanent and the veins at his temples turn red? For a second in that bedroom, I thought I'd found a temporary answer to stay his progression. But even on an isle without magic, he hadn't been safe.
Or perhaps the isle hadn't been safe from him,
Taryn interjects. I ignore the jab.
Could you keep it down?
A brown-haired flyer with a Signeason shoulder patch and third-year rank turns around and glares at Sawyer. And though I hate his scowl, I have to admit, the glasses really work for him.
Turn it back around,
Riddick starts, then pauses to appreciate the flyer.
Well, hello, Signeason. Have you been properly welcomed to Basgaeth yet?
He cranks up a smile I've seen enough times to know he'll be coming out of someone else's bedroom tomorrow morning. The flyer scoffs.
I don't do second years.
Good thing I fuck like a third,
Riddick grins.
Plus, I'm on quest squad, which gives me an additional boost of desirability.
That earns him a second glance and a flash of interest before the flyer turns around in his seat.
Where do you get the confidence, Gamlin?
Marin asks from my left.
Riddick snorts. Survive the gauntlet? After that, you're well aware one rejection isn't going to kill you.
He leans toward the flyer.
By the way, third years usually sit up top, but if you want to be close to me, that's all right, too.
The flyer tilts his head and drums his pen on the desk. I smother a laugh, and Sawyer shakes his head.
Tell Sawyer about the Devarelli army,
Riddick reminds me, settling back in his seat as a first year fumbles an easy question about high ground strategy.
Oh, right.
I yawn again and open the archive's door to a crackle of power in hopes it will keep me from falling asleep. Have to admit, it's nice to be me again.
They have one.
They just call them guards. So yes, they have weaponry to trade. They just don't advertise it.
Wanting you as a weapon is weird. They don't have magic, Kat says from Marin's left.
You're scary with lightning, Sorengale, but without it? We all look her way, but she just shrugs.
What? You were all thinking it, I just said it.
Is there something more important than enemy troop movements going on up there, Iron Squad second years?
Devera asks, and the lecture hall quiets. Heat creeps up my neck, and I sink in my seat.
I mean, Riddick scratches the side of his head. Sorengil's kind of responsible for saving the entire continent right now, so maybe...
Rhee's hand slams over his mouth. Absolutely not. You have our apology, Major.
Devera arches a sardonic brow and leans back against the desk.
And how was your trip to Devarelli, Cadet? Have you saved us all?
Leather jackets creak in every direction as heads turn my way. I clear my throat.
I believe the Prince is debriefing leadership, but we've brokered a deal that will allow us diplomatic access to the Isles as a launching ground for further searches.
And I personally secured Cortland's silence on what Zayden did by promising my own like a sacrifice, adding a gentle reminder that I wouldn't want our new ally to appear weak.
Is that all we should discuss? She asks, her expression uncomfortably close to my mother's, and I nod.
Of all the shops in the merchant aisle, she made us visit the bookstore, Kat adds with an exasperated sigh, tapping her pen on her notebook, and I breathe a little easier with the transfer of attention.
That sounds like our Violet, Devera flashes a smile. Since you're so talkative today, Sorengil, why don't you tell us what about the offensive in Valia is so concerning?
She gestures behind her at the map. Shit. I really should have been paying attention. I scan the map for the length of two heartbeats, noting that some flags that had once been red are now gray. And the red has retreated from the north of Breivik, and on the whole is moving nauseatingly southwest.
It shows southward movement, I answer. Once we raised the wards in Aracia, the Venon changed course, leaving conquered territory like Pavis to concentrate on Poromiel's border with Navarre, in what we now know was an offensive meant to strike the Basgaiath hatching grounds. Moving southwest shows a change in strategy. They're less than a day's flight from Cordon by Wyvern.
But there's a lot of undrained ground to cover if feeding is their only goal. But if that were the case, the map wouldn't look quite so premeditated.
Your best guess on that strategy?
My stomach turns.
They somehow know about the Aracian wards, and they're moving into position for the inevitability of them falling.
A murmur ripples through the room. Devera nods.
That's what I think, too.
My blood runs cold.
But how?
The next week passes in a blur. I've never had to work harder or worried about Zayden quite so much. He should be back by now. The Cenarium expects us to leave in a week for Umbriel, and I'm getting nervous. 8 days should be enough for the circles around his eyes to fade, right? Unless he's progressed to Asum. I shove that thought as far away as possible. When I'm not learning in class, pushing burnout in the range, freezing my ass off in flight maneuvers, practicing with the mini crossbow Marin gifted me, working every muscle to its breaking point with Imogen, or listening to Andarna go into exhaustive detail on why Tarn is the worst, period, mentor, period, ever, period. I'm reading my dad's books with whichever members of my squad can spare their time. It takes Dane and me 2 evenings to decode the clues Dad left to open the passcode-locked books. And once we do, I can't even tell my sister, since she's taken personally for the first time in her entire career. And whenever I'm not doing any of that, I'm in a fighting pit with my squad, either for our own instruction or joining the rest of the quadrant in what's quickly become our favorite activity, watching the shit get kicked out of one another in hopes of learning something. This afternoon, every second and third year in our squad is seated on the bottom left rows of the amphitheater with a book from Jacinia in their lap, while 2 other squads from second and fourth wing practice in front of us under the guidance of Professor Carr, who's rotated in to teach today. Garrick and Bodhi look on from just beneath us, leaning against the wall, both shaking their heads every now and then when they, too, look up from their books. A second year goes flying in a blast of fire, and every single one of us looks up as the guy lands on his ass, flames still rising from his hair.
"You're up," Bodhi jabs Garrick, and he takes off at a sprint onto the mat.
A flick of his wrist and the flames snuff out, deprived of oxygen.
"Letting them get a little close, don't you think?"
Garrick asks Professor Carr.
"Oh, this is gonna get good."
Riddick sets the continent's most redacted volume on Umbriel's warlike customs in his lap, and Sawyer follows suit beside him. Sawyer hasn't joined us in flight maneuvers, but I'm glad he's feeling up to sitting in on classes. It bodes well for his return, if and when he's ready, or even just ready to talk about it.
"Ballsy," Rhee agrees from my other side, using her thumb to mark her place in a book about weather patterns throughout the aisles.
Professor Carr narrows his eyes on Garrick and folds his arms.
"A scar would remind him to wield a little faster next time. It's not like he's dead."
"Flame never should have touched him," Garrick argues.
"Clearly, you haven't taught enough to know the best methodology," Carr snipes. "Having powerful friends doesn't make you a good instructor."
Garrick's jaw ticks as he steps off the mat with the smoking second year, and the guy goes back to his squad.
"He's an asshole," Bodhi notes, then leans back against the wall and returns to reading his assigned collection of early fables from Breivik.
He's looking for tales of dark wielders cured by love, or good deeds, or dancing naked under a full moon after drinking the venom of a rare snake only found on the farthest isle during a lunar eclipse. Or something.
Anything.
I adjust the blank leather cover disguising Dad's book and reread the passage on trial by combat for different levels of entrance to Umbriel's court. Then roll my left shoulder with a wince. Pushing into my stiff trapezius muscle doesn't help soothe the protesting joint either.
"You were too hard on her last night," Garrick grumbles at Imogen, grabbing his book from Bodhi.
For all that we're reading, I can't begin to contemplate what's on Jacinia's desk.
"Fuck off," Imogen mutters behind me, flipping a page aggressively.
"I'm fine." I spare a glance at both of them, then continue down the page. My father's observations on the combative isle are sharp, almost clinical, but lack his usual insight. There's a marked difference between this book, written when he was 23 and straight out of the scribe quadrant, and the manuscript he left for me in his office. But when did he visit the Isles? Or have the time to transcribe the rudimentary dictionaries that have quickly become the bane of Dane's existence?
"She's rotated every single one of her joints at least 3 times in the last hour," Garrick's tone sharpens. "I'd say that means you need to lighten up."
"Nope," Imogen flips another page. "You're not taking your frustrations with Carr out on me. If Violet thinks we're doing too much, she'll tell me." I glance over my shoulder to see her twirling her forefinger, suggesting Garrick turn back around, while Quinn leans over her shoulder reading a volume Queen Mariah sent on venom and their medicinal uses. Given how difficult it was to get our hands on these books, it's wild to think that Garrick could probably walk straight from here to wherever her library is. I blink, then lean forward, bracing my elbows on the wall right above Bodhi's head.
"Hey, Bodhi," I whisper so only the two of us can hear.
"Hey, Violet,"
he answers, looking up.
"What's your second signet?"
I lower my voice even more. He lifts his brows, then glances in Garrick's direction.
"Don't have one."
"As in, you don't have one that I get to know about but will eventually see you wield, or don't have one?" A corner of his mouth lifts into a wry smile that reminds me of his cousins.
"Don't have one. Just like Zayden. Why?"
"Curious," I admit, "and selfishly hoping you'd be able to do something cool like keep Halden from speaking. Gods only know what he'll do at the other Isles after his performance on Devarelli."
"If I could, would that mean I get to go on the next expedition?"
His eyes light up.
"Heads up," Garrick says,
and we both look forward as a first year with a rebellion relic steps into the pit with Timon Kagaso, the newly promoted wing leader for Second Wing. Let's try to keep anyone else from burning. Go figure, another fire wielder was Second Wing's executive officer when Aura died. On it. Bodhi sets his book on the wall and takes a step closer to the mat near the end of the squad. Still can't believe they made Sterling the senior wing leader, Sawyer mutters, glancing up the rows to where Pancheck watches with other members of leadership. Better than Iris Drew, Kat notes as she works out a knot in Traeger's shoulders. Pretty sure she'd murder every flyer in their bed if she could.
True.
Sawyer agrees, his attention shifting up the steps. I thought you all had physics right now. Rhea and I both follow his line of sight as Lynx, Baylor, Evelyn, Sloane, Arik, and Kai descend the steps on our right. The first years are here.
Got out 10 minutes ago, Sloane replies, her gaze darting over us, or rather, our books. We came to help.
Excellent. Rhea jabs her thumb over her shoulders. Empty rows behind the third years. Take a seat and watch.
That's not what I mean.
Sloane crosses her arms and lifts her chin in a way that reminds me of her older brother.
You're in charge of your mission now, right?
Yes. My stomach sinks.
We want to help.
She gestures to the books. Riddick shakes his head. First year is hard enough without adding all this into it. I'm with him.
You're one dragon short of even pairs, Evelyn says, completely ignoring Riddick.
You know, in case you need to split up for some reason. Rhea cocks her head to the side.
Odd numbers don't bother me, I start.
What Sarengail is too nice to say is first years aren't going, Imogen says.
Or helping, Garrick adds over his shoulder.
Didn't ask you, Baylor challenges, glaring in Garrick's direction. Last time I checked, we're the actual Iron Squad, and you're a substitute teacher.
That's not a fight I'd pick, I lift my brows at Baylor.
Unless you'd like your ass kicked, Garrick offers with a flash of a smile.
Sit or move, Dane orders, walking down the stairs. The circles under his eyes have my brows knitting. Between decoding my dad's clues, studying for his own classes, and his duties as wing leader, he's taking on too much, and I'm a major reason for it.
We're trying to help, Sloane argues, her cheeks flushing a second before her narrowed gaze drops away from Dane.
You can help by staying alive, Dane counters, sliding in to sit on the edge next to Rhea and taking out Dad's separately bound dictionary for Umbriel from his pack. Carr tells me you're refusing to train your signet.
You what? I shut my book.
You really going to mourn the loss of another Mari? Sloane fires back at Dane.
His death will always be on my head. Yours will not.
Dane's tone sharpens. I don't coddle first years anymore, so train your signet.
Asshole, she whispers, and the flush in her cheeks deepens.
I lift my brows at the look she shoots him, mostly because I can't tell if she wants to stab him in his seat or...
Fuck,
Garrick mutters, and all our heads turn toward the pit as fire erupts from wing leader Kagaso, streaming toward the first year. Bodhi takes 3 quick steps onto the mat, then turns his hand, and the fire dies. An argument immediately ensues with Carr, but I ignore it and pivot my focus to Sloane.
Why won't you train? I ask her. Would you train if all you did was destroy things?
She drags her gaze from the pit.
Kill people?
Power hums along my bones, hot and insistent.
I don't know, I say quietly.
Would I? She glances at Rhea.
Don't look at me, I agree with her.
Rhea shakes her head and flips to the map section of her book. Sloane's shoulders fall.
I just want to help in a way that doesn't suck the magic out of something.
And I highly doubt you lot would have been content to sit aside last year while your second years went off and saved the continent. My words fail, and Arik lifts a single brow behind her, taking note of my speechlessness.
Solid point, Sawyer says slowly as another first year enters the pit against Kagaso.
Liam, I start, made his choice, Sloane reminds me. We're making ours. She folds her arms. And he would want me to make sure you're as prepared as you can be, even if that means none of us go with you.
Rhi and I exchange a look, and she nods.
Fine. I pivot in my seat and grab the heavy pack at Imogen's feet, then rifle through for the most innocuous-looking texts. Here you go. I hand the stack to Sloane. Read these and write up a one-page report on each.
Oh, for fuck, Kai groans from two steps back.
No whining. You said you wanted to help, Rhi interrupts as Bodhi returns to the wall.
And get them back to me as soon as you can, I finish.
Thank you. Sloane gives them to the others, then glances at me, Rhi, and Dane, before following the rest of her squad up the steps. Arik waits, holding a tome on mythology.
Scribes haven't released your mission report yet. How badly did it go?
Riddick scoffs.
Your arrogant brother.
Give us a second. I cut him off quickly, then set my book on my seat and scoot past Rhi and Dane to get to the steps.
Halden was Halden, I tell Arik, lowering my voice. He did Halden things and caused Halden-style ramifications, none of which are your fault.
A muscle flexes in Arik's jaw, and his grip tightens on the book.
He get anyone killed?
I nod. His guard, Captain Winshire. He looks toward the pit.
Did he jeopardize your mission?
No, Halden got himself banned from Devarelli, but I was able to accomplish what I needed to.
It just cost Zayden.
Gods, I don't even know how much it cost him this time. Arik nods, then looks back at me with eyes that are identical to his brother's, and a gaze that couldn't be any more different.
Are you in over your head, Violet? He asks quietly.
No, I swallow. He narrows his eyes, then nods before following his year mates up the steps. I turn to find the second and third years engaged in a heated debate, all gathered so tightly around Rhi that I can barely see her in the center.
I think you fly from Devarelli to Umbriel, then Traeger starts.
Back to Devarelli, then Athbeen, then here?
Kat interrupts.
You have no idea how fucking long that flight is.
Then you double that journey for Hidotis, then Zelna, Loisum, and the Minor Isles?
No, she shakes her head.
No. Even using Devarelli as a base, it's a waste of flight time.
I lean over Dane's shoulder.
I fucking hate when you're right, Dane mutters.
Rhi drags her finger across the map.
You have predominantly westerly winds until you hit this latitude.
She points to the northern coast of Devarelli. At which point, they shift. So every time you're coming back to report, you're facing a headwind.
Dragons can take it, Marin notes quietly.
Griffins can't, Bodhi finishes, looking over the wall alongside Garrick.
So basically, we're fucked, Riddick notes. It will take us way longer than 5 months to search all the isles.
Numbers fly through my head. The major isles aren't the issue. It's the dozen minor isles that border the Cerulean Sea that pose the conundrum. This last trip took 8 days, and that was just to Devarelli.
Interesting read.
I spin toward that voice. My heart jolts at the sight of Zayden on the lowest step, then settles as I take my first deep breath since he walked away more than a week ago. Hi, I whisper, taking in every single detail of his face before locking my gaze with his. The whites of his eyes are clear, but something about the color.
Hi, he replies, looking me over the same way I just did to him.
You look good. I reach for the bond and nearly melt with relief when I feel his shields give way for me. Glittering onyx wraps around my mind in a familiar wave, and I drop my barriers.
You feel good, too. I slept, he answers. And I feel oddly well.
He clears his throat.
Funny thing about that bedroom.
An erasure? I brace my hand on the rough edge of the wall to keep from tugging on the edges of his flight jacket and yanking him against me. His gaze drops to my mouth and heats.
I used to love it, and now I can't fucking stand it when you're not there.
I missed this. I lean into the bond like I can somehow burrow into it if I try hard enough, bury myself in us. In terms of intimacy, this is even better than sex. Zayden finishes, and I find myself nodding instead of lecturing him about reading my intentions, but that wasn't. My eyes widen. Has he been honing his signet like Riddick?
News from home? Bodhi asks behind us, and I startle. Not unless you want to hear about how Ryerson House needs roof repairs or how the oldest Sorengale sent the largest med bag I've ever seen for the next expedition.
Zayden looks past his cousin to Garrick.
I just need Professor Tavis.
I step forward, but he retreats out of my reach, shaking his head.
We're at Basgaiath.
Right. Back to the rules. Later? I move out of the way so Garrick can slide by on the steps, and the sun catches on the amber flecks in Zayden's eyes as he nods before walking away.
Amber.
It's only sheer force of will that keeps me from chasing him down. Instead, I turn back toward the argument that's continued around Rhee.
Then skip Devarelli and just fly straight there, Bodhi points to the Isle of Umbriel.
The Griffins won't make it, Kat shouts. My focus darts island to island. 10 days here, 20 days there, a month round trip once we're toward the outer reaches of Loisa and the Minor Isles. A sour feeling takes hold of my stomach and it begins to slowly churn. The problem is reporting back to the scenarium between trips. Zayden doesn't have enough time and neither do the Eratian wards.
The Empyrean will side with whatever choice you make, Andarna promises.
But Taryn is quiet, no doubt occupied with finally being able to talk with Segale after their period of forced silence. We have to go. And we have to go now.
So we fuck the rules, I raise my voice and everyone quiets.
Kat throws a practice disc onto the map, and I recognize the sound shield rune she's tempered into it. I glance her way thankfully, then look to the others.
We supply and we go. We leave for Umbriel as planned, but then we
disobey direct orders. We don't fly back between aisles. We don't report or return until we find her kind.
Rhee's brows rise to impossible heights.
That could take a month.
Or longer, depending on weather, Marin guesses. They'll court-martial you, Sawyer reminds us. It's probably the right plan, but you go against direct orders.
He cocks his head to the side.
Then again, it's hard to court-martial the squad that comes back with a seventh breed. Excellent point, Riddick nods. Do we still have to take Prince Pompous?
Yes, Dane leans forward and braces his forearms on his knees.
Some of the Isles won't talk to us without him. Hedotis immediately comes to mind.
This is, Bodhi's eyes narrow on me. Come down here. Magic ripples as I cross the sound shield and step down onto the outer cobblestone rings of the pit.
What's going on, Sorengale? Because I'm all for fucking rules, ignoring orders, and bucking protocol, but this rush,
his eyes. I clench my fists and lower my voice to softer than a whisper. From the alloy in Devarelli. The flecks in Zayden's eyes didn't go back to gold. They're still amber. We have to find a cure before people start noticing or he worsens.
Bodhi's features slacken.
Shit, he says quietly. Hope fades from his expression, but I refuse to let it steal mine.
Well, I have what you asked for.
He reaches into his pocket and hands over 2 vials that have been marked S and A.
I can get more if you want it.
Serum and antidote. Thanks. I quickly pocket them before anyone can see. I'm not planning on using them on...
I'm just glad you recognize you might have to, he interrupts.
We'll find a cure, I promise with far more certainty than I feel. Bodhi's mouth tightens.
I'd kill to go.
But you need to take Garrick with you. Neither of us say what he means. Take Garrick in case you don't. Someone shouts on the mat and both our heads jerk in that direction.
Kagiso shoots another blast of fire, sending a shrieking second ear scrambling backward. But Kar doesn't intervene as the flames creep closer and closer to the terrified brunette.
Help her, I whisper.
I've been ordered to stand down, Bodhi tenses as her screams intensify and she drops to her hands and knees.
The next blast of flames comes within inches of her.
Wield, Kar shouts. Defend yourself!
The second ear out of cloth section splays her hand wide on the mat and screams. Color drains in a circle around her hand, leaving the mat gray.
Oh, shit.
My stomach clenches and I stare stunned. She's turning right in front of us. Or has she been one of them all along? Zayden would have sensed her, right? He was just here. Or would she have sensed him? I palm my dagger. Gasps and shrieks sound in the stands behind us.
Kar,
Pancheck orders. The professor moves faster than I've ever seen him, brandishing an alloy-hilted dagger and driving it straight through the cadet's back into her heart. Just like that, she's dead. Executed. No questions, no chance to cure her. Nothing. Bodhi shudders. Take Garrick.
An excerpt from Unbriel, Isle of Dune by Second Lieutenant Asher Daxton. In a culture that worships the goddess of war exclusively, blood is the preferred sacrifice, and cowardice is the ultimate sin. Chapter 29. It takes 10 days to put plans in motion and get everything together, and the time wears on me like the steady drip of water in the interrogation chamber, grating on my very last nerve. I sit through every class as instructed and practice wielding until my arms drop from exhaustion. But I can't quit watching Zayden's eyes in case their flecks change back to gold whenever I see him during signet sparring. They never do. By the time most of us have gathered on the flight field in the foggy pre-dawn hours of the first Saturday of March, my anxiety to get moving feels like insects under my skin. I hate that we've lied to Halden, that this is only the Unbriel trip. But there's a growing part of me that just doesn't care. He's a fucking liability. After a surprisingly easy discussion with Kat, our squad has grown to include Traeger and Marin. Partially because of Traeger's healing training, but more so, we can split if we need to, given the look on Mira's face as those in our squad approach the lines of waiting griffins and dragons. She's not too pleased about the development. Guess I forgot to mention that part in my missive. Where have you been? I ask, breaking away from the group in hopes of getting any form of privacy. They quickly disappear into the thick fog. On leave, she answers, while you've been back here making plans to disobey direct orders from the Scenarium, which of course is your prerogative as mission commander. She glances at the oversized pack currently murdering my spine. Then the one sitting at her feet. The missives were clever, subtle even. The packs? Not so much. The fact that you were on leave was all Pancheck would tell me when I asked how to get a letter to you. You disappeared. My eyes narrow and I exhale a puff of steam into the freezing air. And we can't help the size of our packs when we have to carry...
Are you worried about not getting enough supplies in Devarelli? Halden asks from behind me.
Mira quirks an eyebrow upward, managing to say, I told you so, without moving her mouth.
More worried you're going to fuck something up again, Zayden remarks.
And I pivot to see him walking toward us with Garrick out of the mist. Halden's spine stiffens.
You don't get to talk to me like that, Ryerson.
Oh, good. I was wondering when you two would start arguing. Mira folds her arms in front of her chest.
Or you'll what? Get yourself banned from another isle? Sit off the coast on Takaris's ship? You're already dead weight, Your Highness. Are you really going to be a detriment, too?
Zayden stops at my side but keeps his hands to himself, just like he's done since he returned.
Everyone here?
Dane is on his way.
I'm not going to apologize for conducting Navarian business while in Devarelli,
Halden starts.
How about apologizing for keeping mission-essential information from those of us responsible for the fucking mission?
Zayden counters, stepping into Halden's space, shadows swelling around his feet.
If it wasn't for us, you'd be dead.
Shit. I glance over at Garrick, who looks back at me like I'm the one supposed to do something.
Let him kill the prince, Andarna suggests, and I hear her halter jingle about 20 feet behind me. He does not represent us well.
He will not be a problem, Taryn assures us.
If only I felt half as certain.
Well, we're off to a great start, Drake notes, sauntering by on his way to the line of griffins,
where the other flyers wait in the heavy fog. I can barely see their shapes from here.
Get out of my face, Halden orders. Must kill you that you can't make me.
A corner of Zayden's mouth rises.
Why don't you scurry into your little basket? Fuck off.
Halden's cheeks redden, but he retreats a single step. I honestly don't care if you kill him, I say to Zayden down the bond, but you will. Wasn't that your line when I nearly took off Cat's head in Aracia?
He's going to get you killed, Zayden retorts. This isn't going to work.
I'm not dying on Halden's account. Riddick walks out of the fog from my left, takes one look at Halden and Zayden, and makes a beeline for my side.
Kind of feels like threshing, doesn't it? Exciting, terrifying. We know we have to go, but there's every chance we're about to have our asses handed to us.
I did not enjoy flying straight through to Athbeen, Halden announces into the fog. We'll only fly halfway today. Fog swirls with the beat of another pair of wings, and the ground shudders as a dragon lands to the left, just behind Riddick. Halden gawks and stumbles backward. The fog obscures all but the outline of claws until the dragon lowers his blue snout to ground level and chuffs a deep breath in Halden's direction.
What the fuck is Molvik?
My stomach lurches.
I told you the firstborn would not be an issue,
Taryn reminds me.
Molvik?
Riddick leans forward slightly, like there's any mistaking the scar that runs across the blue clubtail's snout.
No!
I roll my shoulders, drop my pack, and run past Zayden and Halden straight into the fog.
Don't do this!
I make it less than 30 feet before I find him walking toward us at Dane's side.
I'm not going to sit aside and watch while Halden gets you all killed,
Arik says, tugging the strap of his rucksack to tighten it.
For Dune's sake, he doesn't even have a battle-ready flight jacket.
This isn't what you want, I remind him. Don't let your brother's actions force your hand. I swing a pointing finger at Dane.
And don't you let him do it.
Dane puts both hands up, palms outward at his chest.
How in all that's holy am I to blame for this?
I fumble for an answer.
He's a first year and you're the wing leader.
Dane rubs the bridge of his nose and pushes his fingers outward over the heavy dark circles under his eyes.
Vi, I think he outranks me in this department.
You sure you want to do this?
Zayden asks, so close I can suddenly feel the warmth of him at my back.
Want? No,
Arik shakes his head.
But I need to.
And as much as I don't mind Halden making your life fucking miserable, I do mind him condemning the continent to death by Darkwielder because he can't take a deep breath and count to three when he gets mad.
Sounds great to me. Zayden's hand brushes the small of my back. You good with this?
He glances my way. I study the set of Arik's chin and the determination in his green eyes, then nod in defeat. We are all allowed to make our own choices, and if this is yours, I'll support it. Arik nods, and Zayden and I fall into step with him and Dane, heading for our dragons and Halden.
Looks like we won't be needing that basket after all, Zayden says as we make it back to where Mira waits with Riddick, Garrick, and Halden. We've found ourselves another prince.
Halden's jaw hits the ground as his widened gaze locks on his little brother.
Don't look so surprised, Arik says in greeting.
Don't look, Halden shakes his head slowly. You've let us run all over this kingdom searching brothels and gaming houses for you, and all the while, you've been here?
The fact that you went searching your favorite haunts for me is just the start of where you went wrong, Arik replies.
You're a rider? Halden shouts.
As the dragon would imply.
Riddick points to Molvik.
He could have let you think he was dead, Mira mutters.
He's going to be when our father hears, Halden starts.
Fuck off and tell him, Arik shrugs. Or don't. I really don't care. I crossed the parapet because I was sick of sitting by knowing you and Dad weren't going to do shit about the Dark Wielders. And I'm not going to sit by now and watch you run our only hope into the ground.
I'll be going as the royal representative.
Halden stiffens.
Absolutely not, Cam. He goes by Arik, and he absolutely will, I counter, earning myself a menacing glare from my ex that doesn't even faze me. You're banned from Devarelli and have the temper of a 2-year-old on a good day, Halden. Arik is a rider. He'll keep up with us in the air and on the ground, and having been in his squad for the last 8 months, I can promise you that he knows how to keep his shit together when things go badly.
Halden's glare shifts to Arik.
It was you who breached the royal vault.
Yes, Arik nods.
Father blamed me.
Halden takes a step forward and a tiny twinge of guilt nips the back of my neck, since our past is most likely the reason he took the heat.
Did you stay in Bazgaeth or fly with the rebels?
You already know the answer, Arik replies. Halden turns as red as Sleeg.
Go back to the quadrant. I'll be the only royal.
Good luck in getting a griffin to carry your basket again, Arik says, then walks toward Molvik without another word.
Well, as awkward as this has been, Riddick lifts his brows.
I'm sure you know your way off the flight field, Zayden says to Halden, but the prince's gaze is locked on the claws of the blue dragon.
Violet,
Halden lowers his voice and slowly looks my way. The plea in his eyes hits me straight in the chest.
I won't let anything happen to him, I promise.
Halden nods once.
I'll hold you to it.
He looks at each of us in turn, and the promise morphs into a threat.
All of you.
We spend a day at Athbean and another at Cordon, resting the griffins between legs of the journey. They're far less winded without the baskets to carry, but without magic to bolster their strength, we need to take 2 days to rest in Devarelli before continuing onward. That second day convinces Mira of what she'd already guessed on our first trip. Some runes work off the continent. Now to narrow down which ones and figure out why. We're each supplied with a handful of multicolored quartz discs to test. I'm grateful not to be sunburned, though I can't tell if it's the amethyst disc or the same rune on one of the daggers Zayden gave me last year. But annoyed to all shit that runes are the only thing Mira is willing to talk to me about. The southwestern Devarelli coastline falls away in the early hours of the 8th day of the trip, and the color shifts from aqua to midnight blue as we head over the open sea. And that's all I see on the horizon. Water. If it weren't for ships beneath us making their own journeys, I'd be more than a little apprehensive about flying into nothingness.
Save your nerves for when we reach Umbriel in 9 hours, Tarn tells me, and save yours
for when the winds shift, he instructs Andarna, who's clipped in below.
Gods, I hope the maps my father included are accurate. Dragons aren't exactly boats. They can't just float if they get tired. And 9 hours from now, we'll put our total flight time at 12.
Griffins aren't fond of anything over 8. The air current shifts sometime around noon, giving us a tailwind as the clouds clear. And Andarna relishes in her freedom unclipped from Tairn, off to his side. Her wing beats are strong, but the difference in her left wing is far more visible without magic for strength. Each beat strains the tendons to gain full extension, and it isn't long before she's dipping slightly. Worry wraps her prickly fingers around my throat when Andarna pitches in a gust, but I keep my mouth shut as she climbs back into formation.
Do not lose altitude, Tairn warns her. There is no telling what weaponry arms the merchant vessels beneath us.
Do you ever tire of your own voice? She questions, soaring a little closer to Sigale.
Never, he assures her.
With nothing to do for the next 8 hours but hold on, I listen as Tairn recites the lore of his breed from the first of his line up to Thoreau, the first black dragon to ever successfully bond, back during the Great War, then stops. Apparently, the story is no longer worth telling once humans are involved. The sun has slid into the angles of afternoon by the time Tairn catches sight of land.
30 minutes,
he announces to Andarna and me, then lets loose a roar that vibrates my teeth to alert the others. I pivot in the saddle to check our formation. Everyone is where they should be, with the exception of Kirillair, who is drifting back from her guarded position in the center, toward Atrum's snout.
Just in time, too. Kirillair is fading.
Had to bring the griffins,
Tairn mutters as I turn forward again and the hilly coastline comes into view. The sea transitions from dark blue to white-capped teal, crashing on cream-colored beaches along what appears to be a port city a few miles in front of us.
That must be Sonaram.
We've definitely found the Isle of Dune. I can make out the tiered walls of defenses, including crossbolts from here, and they haven't changed much from what my father detailed in his drawings.
Let's avoid being skewered, shall we? I ask Tairn.
Tairn huffs and surges ahead of the others, then banks right and leads our formation along the northeastern shoreline, giving the port city a wide berth. I block the afternoon sun with a hand on my forehead and scan the coast, noting the end of the city walls.
There's another town in 2 or 3 miles, then nothing for at least 40.
As long as they haven't expanded in the 30-plus years since my father wrote his book. We pass the town and its substantial fortifications, and after we travel another 10 minutes without sight of habitation, Tairn turns inland, breaking formation and flying ahead of the others.
Stay with Sigale,
he orders Andarna. Andarna huffs in annoyance.
Stick to the plan, I remind her.
I loathe the plan, she replies.
The beaches are rockier here, the narrow strip of sand strewn with boulders before it gives way to hills of thick vegetation that roll as far as I can see. All of it is the same muted green as Devarelli.
That one,
Tairn says, locating a suitably large clearing about halfway up a hillside a few miles inland from the coast. And after a perimeter sweep, we finally land in the dead center of the meadow. Birds launch from the trees in a riot of color, quickly fleeing. A low rumble resonates through Tairn, not quite powerful enough to be a growl, but definitely loud enough to warn anything that might consider making us dinner as he slowly rotates, scanning the edges of the trees and sweeping his tail through the waist-high grass.
This will do,
he says once he's completed a turn. Moments later, the rest appear overhead, Sigale leading formation. Their wings cast shade over the clearing momentarily, flaring to slow their descent before they land around us. The ground shudders as they make impact, and Andarna to the right and Sigale to our left. Tiny, Atrum, Kath, Crod, and Molvik touch down behind us, and the griffins fill in the spaces as we form a large circle. Every set of teeth and talons faces the trees.
Hear that?
Tern lowers his head and stalks forward. The jungle around us is unnaturally silent.
The animals here recognize you as predators, that's for sure.
Good.
He dips his shoulder and I start the process of dismounting, leaving all but the essentials strapped behind the seat of my saddle. Everyone strips down to our undershirts, or in my case, my armor, to accommodate the suffocating heat and humidity that rivals Devarelli. And then we make quick work of securing the site and locating a nearby stream for fresh water. Then Kat and Traeger take off into the woods to hunt while half the riot launches to do the same.
We are alone for now, but we won't be for long, Mira says as Tiny follows Tern and Atrum into the sky. Someone will see them.
Good. Once Arik meets with their queen, we can move on. I skim my hand over the pale green meadow grass and pick up a sizable rock to line the fire pit with. Chances of an alliance here are slim. Given how painful it is for the riot to be separated from magic, I doubt Andarna's kind settled here.
What if they learn to live without magic? Mira asks, rotating a beaded bracelet of what looks like black tourmaline on her wrist and watching Riddick and Garrick build a fire as Dane constructs a cooking spit with Marin and Arik.
I don't know if they can, I admit softly, my eye catching on the bracelet. Something about the knotwork holding the metallic beads tickles the back of my brain.